Hey, this is Josh Blaylock, and you're listening to G.I. Joe Chronicles.
The Lombax Crusade presents
G.I. Joe Chronicles.
Don't they realize they're dealing with Destro?
When I choose Gus Bucket, they're gonna scrape you off the walls with a squeegee.
Now stop buttering like a wet toaster and get busy!
Welcome to G.I. Joe Chronicles. I'm one of your commanders, Pat Sampson, codenamed DJ Christatos. And joining me, as always, is my battle buddy in this operation, Jared Albrecht, codenamed Deathprobe.
Pat, it's the prescription for danger.
Hello, hello, Pat, at ease. And to all the green shirts tuning in for this podcast, I want to welcome all of you to Fort Longbox. We appreciate you tuning in to talk some G.I. Joe comics with us as we chronicle our way through the G.I. Joe America's Elite on this episode. Next episode, we will return to our coverage of the G.I. Joe Special Missions by Marvel. I'm trying to pronounce the bold font in our script outline.
Oh, yeah. That's very bold of you to do.
That's what I do. But for this episode, we are back in the G.I. Joe America's Elite series from 2005. On this episode of G.I. Joe Chronicles, DJ Christatos and I are going to rotate in a special ops guest for the show. For this episode, our special ops guest is kind of a regular cat around here. It is Jim Meal, codename Jim the Joe Junkie. Welcome back, Jim.
Thanks for having me, Jared and Pat.
We're happy to have you back here. And let's see, he's been here a couple times, so he's probably done the figures and the vehicles. You know, Jim talks a lot on his Outpost show with his brother about the cartoon. So, Jim, what's your favorite cartoon episode?
Oh, my favorite episode would probably have to be the Worlds Without End two-parter, where they go to the alternate universe. The Cobras are, you know, succeeded in taking over the world. It's just that take on it is really neat. I like the different view on how the world would look if Cobra took over.
I think I've actually seen that one. I feel like I probably covered it with Aaron over on the Real American Headcast at some point. Pat, you want to jump in on a favorite cartoon before we move on?
Well, you know, there's so many to choose from. I'm actually on a rewatch currently of the cartoons. So, of course, you start with number one, with the Mass Device one. I like the ones that had extra story to it. The five-parters, the to-be-continued two-parter ones, as Jim mentioned. I always, you know, what came to my mind is just funny is that one episode, and I can't remember the name of it, but where it's like Duke and he's like Sassy Duke, and that line that he gives.
The one, the Synthoid conspiracy one? Where
he made fun of Scarlet or something.
Yeah, Sassy Duke.
Sassy Duke is the best.
It's funny. What about you, Jared? Do you have a favorite one?
I like the one with the lasers and they're like, choo, choo, and then
I forgot about that one. Yeah. Oh, man. I wish that would have been mine.
Well, you know, I know how to pick them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Speaking of picking things, though, Pat, we've picked an issue for this one.
Jared.
I will turn it over to you for the episode's intelligence report.
All right, Jared. Well, I'm glad you asked, and I'm glad this is what was picked. Today, we will be covering G.I. Joe America's Elite number 3. Publisher was Devil's Due. Its cover date was August 2005. Writer is Joe Casey. Penciler is Stefano Caselli. Inker is Stefano Caselli. Colorist is Hendrik Lim. And letters go to Steve Seeley. Cover art goes to Stefano Caselli and Sundar Raj. And speaking about the cover, Death Probe, please take us through the cover description.
Can do.
Take cover!
Issue 3's cover features Snake Eyes getting the best of Firefly in a sewer. Firefly is getting his face pushed down into the sewer muck as Snake Eyes readies his katana to pierce the saboteur's face.
Saboteur.
Thank you, Pat. But ninjas in a sewer? That'll never sell. Back to you, Pat.
Oh, Jared, you had me at Saboteur. This cover, it just raised this one up a level for me.
I think it raised it up for all of us, Pat.
It did. It definitely did. But let's see how much it actually raises us up by seeing what you guys thought of the cover. And let's go to Jim, the Joe Junkie. Jim, what's your thoughts on this cover?
This cover is high action. There's not a lot of motion, but you can almost see the anger in this cover with Snake Eyes, as Jared mentioned, pushing Firefly down in the mud. And you can just feel it. You just feel the anger. I really like it. It's a good cover.
It took me a little bit to look at this and go, who he was actually pushing down. I was thinking at one time it was Storm Shadow. And I'm like, oh, it can't be Storm Shadow. Can it really? Because like how are they together? So I didn't really understand it was Firefly until reading the story. And then I'm like, oh, okay, it makes sense. There's a lot of line work that's being done in this one. Is it me or just these suits? When you start looking at them from the artwork, they get a little more like line work that's being done. Like, and when you look at Firefly's costume in the mask that covers his face, there's a line going there and there's a line going the other way.
It's called piping.
Is that what it is? Yeah, piping on the suit? You know, like there's
piping. I would think you'd piping. Like to say it because you like pipes a lot.
I like pipes a lot, but not on a suit. You know, I like pipes.
I noticed that too,
are hot and smoky.
What drives me nuts is like, this kind of carries over through the whole issue, but I would much more appreciate it if he did like a two line pipe on one guy, maybe a single line, but like,
yeah, I couldn't tell.
He does like, some of them are very insanely similar.
Yes.
And I'm like, man, or no piping on one guy, piping on one, no piping on the other would be great.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I'm glad I wasn't the one feeling, not that it kind of deters from it. It just is kind of off-putting to me a little bit when I'm used to somewhat how they look. So, and I, like I said, I'm going to say that it's probably their new style. You know, these are older characters. Let's get them some new uniforms, kind of jazz up their stuff a little bit here.
How would you jazz it up, Pat? What would you add?
Pipes.
Piping.
Piping. Yeah. I don't know if I'd add little pipes. You know, if Orsted would probably say a little more flowers, man. You know,
just, yeah, maybe some pastels, just, man.
Yeah, a little lighter, you know. You don't need to be hiding in the dark, man. You can just come right forward and just maybe blind us with that brightness and that like smiley real, attitude.
Like a natural fiber that breathes like a cotton. Oh,
yeah. Because if you're going to be hiding out, you know, you're just going to be hanging around for a little bit. Yeah. That you're going to get sweaty, man. You need that stuff to breathe.
Yeah, man. Just maybe some shorts, some sandals.
Don't eat a burrito before you go.
No, man. No, stay out of the sewer.
Get out.
Stay out of the sewer if you can at all costs. But, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jared, what's your thoughts on the cover?
Man, it's really cool because it has a couple of top tier characters for me. Like Snake Eyes was my number one Joe for about 22 years.
Oh, for only 22.
Okay. Yeah, because that's about the time I graduated college and I realized that Beachhead was from Cooler. Auburn, where I went to college.
Oh, okay.
So. And so it was a circa 2000 and I want to say 2002. So that would actually be slightly over 22 years. Be more like 25 years. This is when I made the switch to Beachhead. But up until then, I was a Snake Eyes guy. I mean, who amongst us isn't a Snake Eyes guy? Like, how? I don't know people who are fans of G.I. Joe, but like, I don't like Snake Eyes.
Yeah.
You know, that's doesn't make sense.
You have some sort of a respect for him, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I guess it's akin to, if we look at the X-Men, one of my least favorite characters, quote unquote, is Wolverine. But I still like Wolverine. Mm. I think Wolverine has been like way too much the cool guy. They rely on that too much. And if anyone had a complaint about that in G.I. Joe, I could see that. Snake Eyes is the cool guy, rely on it too much. Easily. I got it.
Yeah.
But screw that. I love Snake Eyes. He's great. And my number one villain, you might remember, Pat, is Firefly. Mm-hmm. So to have these two guys squaring off in this really well done vanishing point sewer, you can see how it has a great vanishing point that's right about
over his shoulder there. Right?
The vanishing point of the cover is actually behind Firefly's chin. That's where all the lines would converge. If you take the lines of the sewer and took the guys out, that's where they would converge. And it's just really well done. I mean, Stefano Caselli is clearly a pro. He clearly does detail well. Sundar Raj should be lauded for the coloring work on this. It is tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
And give me one second. I will give an extra shout out to someone we don't normally give a shout out to. Evan Salt. Evan Salt, I noticed on the inside of this issue, says graphic design, which means he takes the drawing And then he takes the trade dress, the title fonts and all that stuff and puts it on there. And look what he did. He did a little bit of Snake Eyes over the America's Elite logo to give it that extra pop.
That extra depth.
Very, very nice job all around.
Good catch on that, Jared. Good catch.
Yeah, as Jared mentioned, that's one of the things I like when or they obscure the cover, the title a little bit with something on or there's some Hulk covers where he's breaking it.
Yeah.
Or something like that. I really like when they involve the title somehow in the art.
Definitely adds a quality.
All right. Well, I think we talked enough about what our thoughts are on the cover. Let's get down to the rating of this. And here on G.I. Joe Chronicles, we have a 1 to 10 flag point scale. 1 meaning you didn't like it at all, and 10 meaning it's perfect, and you should make this a recruiting poster for, you know, doing some sewer work. You know, if you're going to do some martial arts, you're going to want to do it in the sewers. Who knows? There may be even some turtles down there as well.
It would be so great if they showed up. Oh,
that'd be kind of cool. A good Turtles G.I. Joe crossover.
Ooh. Have they done that? I feel like they might
have. I don't know. You know?
No, Jim's shaking his head. No, like they've crossed Turtles over with like Ghostbusters, which was great. And
Batman,
but not Joe, huh? Two 80s properties have not yet intertwined.
Well, possibly. IDW did the Infestation where they crossed over Ghostbusters, Transformers, G.I. Joe, maybe Turtles. It might have been Infestation 1 or 2. So there might have been a little bit there. I'll have to do some checking.
You know what? And we love to hear from our listeners. So if you're out there going, oh, they totally did crossover, you guys didn't know it, put it in the comments, man. Hit us up with a comment at Longbox Crusade on X, Facebook, Instagram, or on YouTube. We'd love to hear from you.
Let us know if we should check it out, too.
We're kind of talking directly to Matt and probably Cameron and Jim, but Jim's already here. And Gary, and probably Gary, too. Yeah.
You know who you are.
You guys know who you are, the core guys that know everything about G.I. Joe.
Help us out. All right. Well, let's go ahead and figure out the flag points on here. So, Jim, 1 to 10 flag points on this cover.
This is getting very high marks for me. I'm giving it 9 flag points. As I said, you look at that, and you want to know what is going on inside that issue with just the action, the pose, and as I'll talk about once we get into the storyline, the history of these two characters, you know there's something going on there. Mm-hmm. So I give it a 9.
All right, very good. Well, Jarrett, it is your turn now to tell us, how would you rate this cover?
We've said it before many times in this show, Pat. A lot of times your score of the cover is determined by who's on it.
Mm-hmm.
Got my favorite villain, and it's got a top-tier Joe. Ooh, it's well-drawn. It's in the sewer, which is so very 80s in a way. If you think about every 80s video game that had a ninja in it, there was a sewer level.
Mm.
So I'm going to go 10. Yo, Joe! I'd love to have this hanging on my wall. Yeah, I got to pull the trigger.
All right. No, respect. I totally understand that one. Unfortunately, I can't meet you at the 10, but what I can do is meet you a little bit lower at a 9 with Jim. I
think it's so you guys are two cool guys.
Hey, finally.
Hey, you're cool saying guys. That. You say that. That's not my words. That's your words.
Okay.
But I'll take it. I'll take it. You guys. And one chump out of 10, but a good chump.
I don't know. How does that work?
Well, you said it. I didn't. So I'm just using your words against you. But anyway. Let's go ahead and move forward. Now that we got the cover out of the way, let's go ahead and go back to Death Probe for the story synopsis in the mission brief.
Here we go. As the Joe team scrambles to figure out the best way to stop future satellites from being weaponized by crashing them to Earth, Destro is, as usual, finding the best way to position himself for success in all the chaos. Snake Eyes has been shadowing Firefly in the ruins that remain of Chicago, only to discover that the mercenary has been hired to eliminate much of the Chicago's gang activity. And the two enemies must join forces to defeat the horde of gang members called down to take them both out. The Joe team eventually figures out how the mysterious enemy is bringing down the satellites, but must navigate some tricky international diplomacy waters to prepare a counterattack. And that counterattack just got more difficult because Destro has just made available a robot army of Iron Grenadiers to help protect Vance Wingfield, the mastermind behind all the chaos.
Now, back to G.I. Joe.
Okay, it's time to get into highs, lows, what does. You guys know how it works. We're going to go two rounds. We're going to be orderly, and we are going to start with Jim. What's your first thought, Jim?
My first thought is reading this and knowing the history, as I said, of Snake Eyes and Firefly, when they were battling, this goes back all the way to issue 43. And this is what I like about the Devils Do run. They still take stuff from the Marvel run, even this far into the Devils Do, they're still touching on that stuff. Issue 43 of Marvel run is where Firefly was involved in killing the Softmaster and injuring Billy. So all the way back there. And then in issue 125, we find out that Firefly had something to do with the killing of the Hardmaster. So this is personal for Snake Eyes. I like how they, you could tell in that fight, it was just ferocious and Snake Eyes was not going to give up until he had to.
Yeah, it left me with a question, and either one of you can help out here. We spent a fair amount of time in the story about that, and it was sure as heck fun to watch. But I didn't understand, like, Snake Eyes, had he been assigned to monitor Firefly to try to dig up leads, maybe? Because the Joes still don't know who's behind it. So I could buy that. But otherwise, he's just, like, he's just following Firefly for revenge purposes. There's a lot of other things to be done. So I was a little confused about that.
You know, I could not remember if that was what he was told to do.
I think I remember the Joes, you know, being told to, you know, beat the bushes and kind of figure out who's behind this. Yeah. And that's my best explanation, but it just seemed weird. It was like, just in Chicago, keeping an eye on Firefly, yeah, you know, for the heck of it.
Well, I don't know if it's been a while since we read the other issues building up to this. So I don't know if he was there on the ground unit helping out and saw Firefly and kind of just, you know, oh, I got to follow this guy to figure out what's going on.
Jim, do you have any thoughts?
Well, somewhere in this issue, Joe Colton mentioned that he didn't know where three of his operatives were. Snake Eyes was one of them, right? Scarlet was the other. And who was Duke, the third one? Anyway,
Duke.
It was Duke. That's right. It was Duke. And we don't see where Duke's is at for long way into this run. But I almost wonder if, you know, he was just Snake Eyes, as I think Jared mentioned, he was beating the bushes trying to look for these Cobra agents they haven't seen for a while. Because when was the last time you saw Firefly? Was it when he was with Serpentor in the original Devils? It's a little gray, but I don't remember seeing him after that. So Snake Eyes was just tracking him down, and Firefly happened to be in Chicago where the satellite was brought down.
Yeah, makes sense to me. We'll run with it.
That brings up my question I had. Do we know who Firefly is working for? He doesn't kind of say it.
This counts as your round in round one.
And that's fine. That's fine, because that would be my what the on this one is. I couldn't remember.
I think they just really hinted that he was like working for some big boss, a big crime boss that had met his figure. That's what he said. Some guy who met his amount.
His allowance to do it. Okay. So I don't know. Is it Wingfield that maybe is paying him to?
You never know who it could be.
Is it Destro?
I don't. It's Duke.
Is it Duke? Oh, Duke.
I don't know. I'd be surprised if we hear more about it, because I feel like they just wanted us to be like, okay, he's working for some big mobster guy who met his price. But I mean, if they did bring back another layer on that, I'd be impressed.
Mm-hmm, definitely. I enjoyed the fight scenes as well, too, on that. That was just something in my mind. And I'm like, well, who is he really working for? And with the talk that Destro and Wingfield were having, I was like, ooh, could it be one of these two guys? Or could it even be Commander? Ooh, I just thought about it. Ooh, that's another one too. Yeah. Laying seed for something else. I don't know.
You never know. You just brought up Destro. So I want to use Destro in my round one. He's very cool right now. I like a lot of things about Destro. I like Destro cruising around in a submarine where no one can find him.
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
Does Destro have a Scottish accent, or is it a Russian accent like Sean Connery had in Red October?
I will always hear him as the voice actor from the cartoon in my head. So whatever that is what we're going with. He's still clearly a little emotionally on edge over, I think, what happened to Baroness and his child.
Mm-hmm.
He's being very short with Alexander. he's just loving sowing the seeds of chaos right now. He's just like, oh man, he's like, the Joes don't know who you are, but they're going to figure it out soon enough. Why don't I make life harder for him? You want a bunch of robots? You're getting a robot. You're getting a robot. You're getting a robot.
I'm going to give you a deal on this stuff. And just so I can.
I'd never really seen robotic grenadiers before.
I was going to ask that too.
Or I wonder if they're cyborgs or if they're full blown robot. I don't know. I guess we'll learn more.
Are they bats? Bat technology that now have been turned on to, you know, grenadier. But oh man, the iron grenadiers are cool. Either way, back in the days, and these look cool. I'm like, oh man, these are cool looking. They're like, you know what these remind me of? You've played the Star Wars game, the Dark Troopers, right? Where they're just like more beefy looking stormtroopers, but they were robots. And oh man.
So yeah, things are just interesting around Destro. You know, he's not embroiled in any Cobra stuff. So there's not a lot of backstabbing or scheming that we know of. It's just Destro being salty in a submarine somewhere. Just like, you know what? I hate everybody. I hate everything. I'm going to make everybody miserable.
And he gets mad at his own son. Well, the machine's running at 98%. You know, I don't like nothing. That's 2% less than I like.
I have to jump in on that because this reminds me of pretty much every time my son, Jordan, especially, would come home. Hey, Dad, I got a 98 on the test today. And I'd always go, 2 points left on the table. So I guess I'm raising an Alexander over here.
What I like about this is it's Destro being an arms dealer. As you mentioned, he's looking at it going, how can I profit from this? And what kind of chaos can I create?
Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned, he's still hurt from Baroness and his child. So he's in an I don't care mood. I like that, bringing him back to that original Destro attitude, I guess, is the word.
Yeah, it's very back to his roots. It's back to his roots.
I like Destro when he's about himself, right? And And this is, like you said earlier, Jarrett, this is him playing the field, playing both sides, because he knows it doesn't matter. He's not going to get caught for it, or he's not going to do anything. He's just sitting there with that big spoon going, stir this baby up a little.
Stir in the pot.
Oh, by the way, you want to give me some money too? Okay.
All right, let's go back to the top of the order. It's back to Jim. What do you got, sir?
I don't know if this is a bad or a good or a what the, but when I read this series back in 2005, I really didn't like what they were doing with Flint and how he was being portrayed. But after rereading it, I think this past year I reread it, I'm like, you know what? That's exactly how most of us would be. If something like that happened to our spouse, we would be ticked. So his take, how they portrayed him, I can see, I like it. It's a little bit darker, a little edgier. It's a good character building because later on, they start to develop and he starts to come out of it a little bit. And he's stronger for it. So I really like their take on Flint, whereas I didn't when I first read it. So
no, you're right. It very much reminds me of the movie poster for the movie Desperado, where it says he came back to sell a score with someone, anyone, everyone. I feel like that's Flint right now. He just,
he's very salty.
General Colton had to tell him to check his attitude.
Let me ask you guys this question now. They bring this up again, is with Flint, knowing where his headspace is at, they created a special team, got rid of all the other ones are on standby. Why did they pick Flint, knowing that he is in this kind of state in mind right now? Was it more to just keep an eye on him and to help him so he wouldn't go rogue, or to leverage that for what they needed him to do? You know,
I think both. I think it's keeping him close so that they can keep an eye on him, because if you just took him off the team and said, okay, you're on leave indefinitely,
yeah, he'd be gone.
He's going to be James Bond in License to Kill. I'm all
that'd
over
be the cool. Movie. I'm all on that. I'm on that.
And I would watch that. But I think it's keeping him close. And I think good leaders know how to use someone's edge. And I think that may be going on as well.
I think so too.
While you got the mic, Pat.
All right. Well, I am going to talk about the artwork in here. Very nicely done. Very great artwork that is done. What I really like about it is the panel layouts. And I think I continue to say this through some of these episodes, is just the way these panels are laid out, telling the story. especially in the fight sometimes, you know, just watching the action flow that it does through the panels. You really don't need much words, but it just talks to you and continues to help be that extra character, that extra camera moments, the angles that are used throughout this story. So I really hats off to the creative team on the layouts and the art on here.
Definitely. Caselli continues to do a good job. He has good layouts. I think right now, as far as like flowing action, like the fight scenes with him and Firefly, I think right now out of a 10, I'd probably give him about a 7. He's doing pretty good, but I think it could be a flow a little better. He hasn't reached Breyfogle level for me yet. But what he does get right, I think, really well is facial expressions. He's really good at faces.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that definitely shows through. And in my final round, I just thought it was neat that they're really incorporating geopolitics. You know, they're like, okay, we've kind of figured out how he's doing it. Now we got to go storm all these satellites. And they're like, well, a lot of these are in other countries.
Yeah.
And what was really kind of funny about that is like, that was like a surprise or something. I can't remember if it was Stalker or somebody who was like, let's go get him. But they're like, well, we can't because they're in another country. Like, you knew that before that came out of your mouth. You knew you were going to go blasting at satellites in other people's countries. And I think most importantly, I want to point out that this all starts at the Arecibo satellite dish in Puerto Rico, which is, you may remember it from the end of GoldenEye. That's where big battle at the end of GoldenEye happened. It's also featured in Contact with Jodie Foster. And due to severe levels of fanciness, your boy has been there. So that was cool. I heard that just maybe a couple of years ago, though, they actually, it was kind of going to pot, if you will. It was kind of degrading when I got there to visit it. And I heard that they eventually did disassemble it recently.
Okay.
So I don't know that it's there anymore, but they really needed another movie like GoldenEye to come in. Cause when GoldenEye came in, you know, they cleaned it up all shiny and, but yeah, it's huge. It's, I mean, you saw it in GoldenEye. It's big. It's
big.
So just something I'm fancy. All right. Anyone got anything burning before we move on?
The only other thing I have is the continuing verbal sparring between Storm Shadow and Shipwreck.
Oh, that was good.
I like it. I like that. And two different personalities, and Storm Shadow's like, yeah, just kind of just wait till you need me. And then you know, so I really like that.
Oh, I got to jump in there because I totally meant to talk about this too. Because I think more importantly, who was the first one to defend Storm Shadow? And this is important.
It was Stalker, wasn't it?
Stalker. Why do you think that is, Pat? G.I. Joe trivia time.
Well, because they go way back.
Tommy knew each other from Vietnam.
Yeah.
Oh, by the time this storyline came around, they probably bumped that war up a little bit because it was getting a little long in the tooth. But they know each other from military past. They've been in firefights together. Mm-hmm. So there was a point in his life where Stalker was regularly putting his life in Storm Shadow's hands.
Yeah.
So even though they've had this problem with him with Cobra over the years, there's still a nugget of that. His idealized notion of Tommy, I think, is still in there, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Glad you brought that up, Jim. That was a great moment. And you mentioned it earlier. The writers of this know their Joe history.
You know, I'm going to say a good thing, too, for General Colton, speaking about Stalker, because we get off of what happened in the issue before, where they went out of country. When Stalker is reporting back to Colton, and they're having him talk about it, Colton takes a moment to just tell him, hey, your team should be commended for what they did, but just now is not the right time. But just know that, hey, you know, I recognize what you and your team did. And I'm like, you know what? That's a cool guy.
Good leader.
Yeah. With all the crap going down. And then just to go, you know what? Before we go, you did a good job. Thanks.
You know, I don't think Stalker's too upset about that. I think he's got plenty of medals. I don't know.
He
really needs another one.
but and, you know, how cool is that they continue to use these original Joes that are just continue to keep using these guys? You know, Stalker, he's a cool guy, and he's doing his job.
And you don't get much more original than Joe Colton.
That too.
Okay. With that, I'm going to hand it all back to DJ Cristados for the IG's report on the combat readiness of this issue.
And for those of you who don't speak military, that means we're going to score this issue's story on the same 1 to 10 flag points scale we used earlier. So, Jim, on a scale of 1 to 10 flag points, how many flag points are you ready to send in so you can get this issue hard-bounded and be all come fancy like Jarrett. Are you all in on your flight points?
Actually, I am. For this issue and most of any of the American Elite issues, I'm at a 10.
Wow.
I really like these issues. This one is specifically, it's got action. It moves the story forward. Great character moments. It really builds on the characters, uses stuff from the past. So I really like it. It's a 10.
All right. That's awesome to hear. Jarrett, are you going to stay with the same flag points that you had for the cover, or will you change it up?
Man, Jim, about talking me into a 10 on this.
I know.
This has just been moving along really well. You have Destro doing awesome Destro things. I really like that moment with Stalker sticking up for Storm Shadow. Good cliffhanger. I won't go all the way, but I will give it a strong 9.
Ooh, strong.
Joe 9. November was here. I think it's really, really good. I think it just kind of missed some sort of big pop element. Although, I mean, you could say the Snake Eyes Firefly battle was quite cool, obviously, and that could be your pop moment. But I think it would have made the 10 if I had a little bit better understanding of why. Because just off the cuff, it was like I just felt like Joe Casey wanted us to see Storm Shadow fight Firefly in a sewer somewhere.
Well, you know, if it can't fight Storm Shadow, then it's got to be somebody else that's kind of close to his caliber, or at least.
I appreciate him mixing it up. You know, it doesn't have to always be Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow. Yeah. You know, Firefly is a good opponent for Snake Eyes. You know, of course, Zartan, all those guys. So, yeah.
Well, believe it or not, I am going to go with you, Jarrett, on this one. I'm at a 9 as well.
Two cool guys.
Well, yep, that's two cool guys and one chump at 10.
Oh, why you got
to
do
him like that? Chump. He's a good chump. Why you got to do like that? Well, just what we do. That's the bit. So. But it's a good bit.
I'll take it.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I think I could have used a little more fighting just to kind of that play out just a little bit more. And my questioning on why was Firefly, what was going on with him? I just didn't get that part of it. But maybe it will be revealed in the next issue because he's still around and so is Snake Eyes. So let's see what happens going forward. Now that we've gotten the flag points out of the way, it's time to go and reward either a Silver Star medal for gallantry in action or a Silver Snake for sneaky snakitude. Ooh, and well, we'll see what's going to happen in this one. This is where each of us get to reward the character or something in this issue that went above and beyond the call of duty or below and even lower into sneaky, sneaky tune. Jim, will you give out a Silver Star or will you give out a Silver Snake?
I am going to give out a Silver Snake to Firefly. He didn't back down. He, you know, stood up to Snake Eyes. I don't know if you can consider he won, but he lived to fight another day.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, if you live and you fought Snake Eyes, I think you won.
How cool was it that he grabbed Snake Eyes' blade from him? I had to double take a look at that panel and go, oh, he actually grabbed Snake Eyes' other sword.
Saboteur.
Yeah, very saboteur.
Very sneaky. But no, Firefly is my Silver Snake.
Very good. Good choice. Jarrett, do you have a Silver Star or a Silver Snakey Saboteur?
I have a silver briefcase full of silver dollars from Silver Mars Industries for Silver Mask Destro. I love Destro in this issue. He's so salty and he's just the core of Destro right now. He's not muddled with Cobra problems. He's just running things the way he likes to run things, which, oh, by the way, if you look at his track record away from Cobra, it's not bad.
No, it's not.
He's a pretty good arms dealer. And it's neat to see that. So I'm going with Destro. What about you, Pat?
I'm going with you on Destro as well, too. And you're right. When Destro is by himself, he does pretty well for himself. And even when he was running Cobra in those earlier issues, he was doing a good job, I thought. You know, until, sure. I got to give it up to this guy now.
What noise did he make?
Okay. You know, that's because sometimes it's like those old masks when you only had that slit. And so when you try to talk too much, it just, and then your tongue gets caught and it just, it's hard to eat the candy through it. And no, well, you know, we've all been there. But yeah, I like Destro. And how baller is that he's got this technology that can just hologram his face around wherever he wants.
I know, right?
And it follows him and knows what the guy's doing. And he's like, don't even bother to try to figure out what I'm doing because I'm too special. I'm too fancy. You got fancy hologram going on.
You know, I once had a conversation with my brother's floating holographic head, man. I admittedly that I had had some mushrooms before that. So
yeah,
it could have been technology or it could have been just, you know, man,
I thought I had that happen, that experience. And so I went to my brother and said, hey, man, you're a tech guy. I just had this out-of-body experience with the floating head of yours. Can you do that, dude?
Oh, it's all Orsted's idea.
Yeah, man. I was like, you know how much we'd be saving on phone calls?
He's got to hack these mushrooms, man.
Yeah.
Got to hack into them.
You know what? We can take this whole, get a big botanical garden going on, and we make these special mushrooms, man. You don't need that tech. You just need the shrooms.
Thanks
just find by. Some rooms.
And say thanks for stopping by, Orsted, thank you for stopping by.
Find some rooms for the shrooms. That's all I'm saying. All right, Orsted, thanks for being here and stopping in again. And with that, let's go ahead and hand it over to Jarrett for his segment called Death Probes Toy Chest.
It's here, the G.I. Joe collection. Each sold separately. G.I. Joe from Hasbro.
All right, Pat, let's get into Death Probes Toy Chest. It's the segment where I take something or someone featured this issue and give you a brief toy history on it. And for this issue, gentlemen, it was pretty easy because since we've started G.I. Joe Chronicles, way back when we first kicked off the first 43 issue run of Devil's Due, I've been keeping track of like every toy that I feature. And in this issue, literally everyone else has been featured on Death Probes Toy Chest except for one character that appeared in the book. And he didn't even have a lot to say or do, but it was Roadblock.
Mm.
So if this trend continues next issue, I'm just going to make something up or hope to God there's a vehicle in there or something. Or I even looked up to see if Vance Wingfield ever had a figure, but he's available at customjoes.com.
Oh.
But no, not even a mail-in or anything. Anyway, let's talk Roadblock. Roadblock is a heavy machine gunner. His name is Marvin F. Hinton. He's from Biloxi, Mississippi, where I have spent plenty of time because that's where Communications Officer School for the Air Force is. His figure description is as follows. He has a camo tank top with black tack gear, brown pants, black boots, and dark green gloves. Roadblock came with a light green helmet, a brown backpack, a brown ammo box that attached to the backpack, a light green M2X machine gun, and a light green tripod. He was first released in 1984 as part of Series 3. He was discontinued in 1986. He is a very popular character because at this time of recording in the 3¾-inch size, there are currently about 25 versions of Roadblock. Let's toss it around the room. Wow. We will start with Jim. Did you have version 1 Roadblock? Or did you acquire it later? I'm certain he's in your collection, but how did it happen?
I didn't have him as a kid, but I do have him now. I'm sure I got him in a toy lot that I picked up somewhere. And he's one of those that, you know, back in the day showed up on the cartoon all the time. So he's popular. But no, I have him now, but didn't have him back when I was a kid.
Pat.
You know, it's one of those figures that I don't think I had as a kid, but I've definitely seen him at friends who had him. And was able to play with him as we played G.I. Joes, as you do when you're kids. But yeah, just a cool looking figure.
Definitely. I think the Roadblock that is in my display cabinet right now, if I'm not mistaken, is the one I have from when I was a kid. Broken crotch and all. I think I have a broken crotched Roadblock still in there.
Ooh, ouch. Yeah.
Yeah. Had him as a kid. Really liked him. Interesting side note that I just want to bring up about him. He got introduced about the same time as Duke, right? And yeah. We always say that Duke kind of took over Stalker's spot. And Roadblock was almost a replacement for Rock and Roll.
Yeah.
But I feel like Roadblock had enough of his own personality with the cooking and the rhyming and the budding friendship between him and Rock and Roll. mm-hmm. that it wasn't as much of a letdown for me as Duke was. Now, I've stated several times on the show that I wasn't big on Duke. I thought he was just kind of bland as a kid, but he moves up their ladder here at Devil's Due because they really use his covert ops that he was on between, you know, old Joe from the 80s mm-hmm. in this series. They're like, what was Duke doing? And you're like, oh, man, he was doing some stuff. He's like James Bond.
Well, even Roblox, I think, in the comics got some love as well, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that one issue where he's just like that gun and just blaring forward. Was that?
Yeah, that's the Zek cover.
The Zek 40s. Man, that's a cool looking cover of Roblox. In an earlier issue when he takes the whale's armor off and puts, oh, man.
I don't know if you've ever seen this, but I had a comment on Twitter years ago. I don't know if he's still the guy. I know under the last presidential administration that the head chef for the White House, have you ever seen this guy? He might still be. I don't know if they change chefs when they change administrations or not. If you've seen this guy, he is Roblox. He is stepping right out of the pages of G.I. Joe. He's got this giant muscle bound black dude. And then he's got the chef's gear on. Like you see Roblox doing it in his downtime. You're just like, Roblox works at the White House. It's amazing. If you've never seen it, Google it. The White House chef. You're going to be like, what? Trust me. They need to make chef version.
Yeah, I was just thinking that too.
They did some. There's like a cover of maybe Frontline. There's a cover that makes it look like a chef version Roblox action figure.
Oh.
Jim's nodding.
And there was an episode issue of Frontline. The last issue was a Roblox.
That's the one. That's the one I'm thinking of.
Yep.
So that's an alternate cover for the last issue of Frontline?
It's cover A at number 18 of Frontline.
Okay, so it's the
18A.
A cover. It's yes, the primary yes. cover. And I yep. think that's the one I have in my... Because I don't know if I mentioned this, but I also have all the issues of Frontline hardbound as well from Omaha Bound.
Yeah.
That's all the time we have, folks. Yeah.
You'll edit that out, right?
Yes. Let's move on. Pat, what is next?
Well, Jared, I'm glad you asked. Next up is our feedback segment called Combat Comms.
Communications officer, code name Breaker.
As always, we want to start off Combat Comms with a roster of our Battle-Hardened Crusader Club veterans. These are the fine folks that have joined our Crusaders Club. They enjoy early access to special long box video episodes, free raffle giveaways, voting on show programming, earned seats on episodes, just like Jim has. Being a Crusader Club gets you first dibs at being a guest. So make sure you sign up. And so, so much more. So these are the folks reaping the benefits and giving some much appreciated support to the show.
Mr. Alan W. Wright, the bold outlaw himself.
Angelica Wolf.
Hello. Oberyn Elvis.
Bill Beer.
Braxton Underwood.
Clinton Robinson.
Captain Entropy.
Clark Westfield.
Dave Collins, the Battle Wagon.
Battle Wagon.
Ezra Gallo.
Gary V.
Gene Hendricks.
Gerald O.D. Green.
Heinz K.
Jason Keen.
Jason Lady.
Jeremy L.
Jim Jarman, Jim Jarman, Jim Jarman, Jim Jarman. I hope you like Jim Jarman too.
Jim Meal, a.k.a. Jim the Joe Junkie.
Joe Thomas.
John Watson.
Josh Strickland.
Candace Ward.
Kathy Bright, the MVP.
Matt and Lizzie Passo.
Mark Ross.
Maxwell Traver.
Miranda W.
P.D. Devins.
Paul Hicks.
Rick from Jeff and Rick Present.
Rob Morgan.
Samantha Maney.
Sean Urbanski.
Spidey 67.
Spread Sheets.
Steve Cronin.
Tim Price.
Tony Pennington.
And the Toronto Cop.
If we missed anyone on our list, we apologize. Please keep in mind that we record these episodes well in advance of release. So if you are a recent addition, we should be adding you soon. But still, don't worry about it. Relax, guys. Just let us know that we missed you by sending an email to contact@longboxcrusade.com and we will get it all straightened out. So you might be asking yourself, how do I become a Crusaders Club member? You know what? It's simple. Just head on over to patreon.com and search for Longbox Crusade. For as little as $1 a month, you'll get access to the amazing world of the Crusader Club. Come and check it out. Now let's see what messages from our platoon of loyal listeners we have waiting for us on Breaker's ComSat.
Call it, G.I. Joe! Go get Breaker! He can do it!
These are from episodes 46 and 47, which were America's Elite number 1 and Special Missions number 1, where Jared and I covered it with Matt Passo. So, Jared, go ahead and take us to
the comments. Can do! I will start with our old buddy, G.I. Gary. He said, great show. Glad to know we found Orsted's nemesis, Cesspool.
Yes, definitely. See, Cesspool would be a good one to have in the sewers at this time.
That's a good point.
Jim, you want to take us on the next one?
From Scotty Cameron, we see fallout from issue number 0, and it's followed up by the Joes going on separate investigations. We see Colton's leadership tested with the situation and contrast it with Destro's.
Good catch. Correct. There.
Correct. Scotty's he's actually reading these books, I think.
Yeah.
As opposed to me, I guess on every episode.
Well, you've been doing a great job.
Thank you.
I'll take the next one from Serpy Matt. And Matt says, hey, I'm on a podcast episode for the first time ever. Ooh, well, I'm glad that we were your first time. Don't take it in that way, but I'm glad we were your first podcast to be on. So thank you for being on with us. Matt says it was a blast talking G.I. Joe with two cool guys.
Hey.
Hey. Wait a minute. Is that him and somebody or
me and Jared? He left it open for interpretation.
And he says, bonus, you will hear the phrase robo-batlings.
That you all know. True. I didn't know that was his first podcast.
I didn't know either. So
he did pretty
well. He did very well.
Next up, it's becoming one of my favorite parts of the feedback we get. It's our old buddy Christian Romero, who just every time we do one of these, he takes a picture of the issue. He has posted a picture of America's Elite number 1, and he simply says, got it.
Next one from G.I. Gary. Great show as always. You happen to forget the first Hama Trimpy creation that became a figure, the Baroness. Yo, Joe, what's Orsted doing hoarding all that sassafras?
Listen, man, my sassafras is my business.
I use the shrooms for the business. The sassafras is all mine. It's just man. All mine.
Keep your sassafras out of my sassafras, or I'll kick your sassafras. I'm just kidding. I'm not a violent guy.
But I know somebody who is.
My brother, though, man.
That dude can definitely use some sassafras. You know, it's like chilling. You know, I'm just like chilling on a summer's day, drinking some sassafras and just, I'll take the next one from Scatty Cameron.
Scatty Cameron. I love it. Skibbity-boop-bop that to me now.
I'm going to write you something on your podcast. Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to take one from Scatty Cameron, and he says, the hunt for Red October because that was the first thing that comes to my mind when I think of this comic. Tom Clancy and Larry Hama might have had a common influence. Funny, I usually associate G.I. Joe with Captain America, Mission Impossible, and 007. But it does have some Ryanverse DNA. And Scotty's talking about Special Missions number 1 from the Marvel year.
That he is. And he went on to talk about it in greater detail over on Facebook. Scotty's great about commenting
about
Scotty's different places, awesome. You know, that always helps the algorithm and all that stuff. So we appreciate that. He did state over on Facebook in a little more detail. He said, great show, guys. Definitely like having Pat reference the Hunt for Red October because this story definitely had some of that in its DNA. I like the little history lesson from Jared. Hey, hooray. Someone like my history. I feel like Jason all of a sudden. I gave a history lesson. Yeah. And now I think that story influenced Larry Hama when writing Special Missions number 1. And I'm talking about the actual early 80s Soviet submarine run aground off the coast of Sweden, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere up there. Scandinavia. So he feels Tom Clancy had a hand in that when he wrote Hunt for Red October. I definitely think the October Guard is underutilized because they are great as sort of these adversaries to Joes who aren't evil. They're just at odds for geopolitical reasons. Here's to hoping we see them in a Real American Hero comics from the Energon Universe comics, both from Image and Skybound. Also, I'd love some classified figures. And If they released like a box set of the October Guard in classified form, I'd be like, oh, I have to bust out the old credit card.
Take my money. Take my money. October Guard figures would be crazy good.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for those comments. We really do appreciate it. And thank you to Scotty Algorithm Cameron for what he does for us. Get boosting that algorithm. I really appreciate it, Scotty. As a reminder, you can also leave us a voicemail by calling 707-532-5269. That's 707-532-LBOX.
Pick up the phone.
Well, lads, that will bring us to mission complete status for this episode of G.I. Joe Chronicles. If you'd like to hear more from us in the realm of comic books, action films, vintage TV, movies, serials, and so much more, check out the entire Longbox Crusade Network. DJ Christados, where can they find that?
Well, Jared, I am glad you asked. You can find it on pretty much all the podcatchers that are out there. And if you don't, go ahead and send an email to contact@longboxcrusade.com and we'll get it all squared away so you can listen to it. Otherwise, go to www.longboxcrusade.com. We're also on X, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, all at Longbox Crusade. Back to you, Jared.
Thank you, Pat. If you'd like to chat with us online, we can be found at... Back to you, Pat.
Well, Jared, I'm glad you asked. You can find me on the X Twitter at Christatos01. Back to you, Jared.
I am at Yard Sale Artist on X, Facebook, and Instagram. You can find my artwares at www.theyardsaleartist.com. And I can be found at whatever your local barbecue restaurant is sampling the ribs. Jim?
You can find me on Facebook as Jim Miel, J-I-M-M-I-E-L, and on X as Jim the Joe Junkie.
All right. Thanks for joining us for this episode of G.I. Joe Chronicles. We will see you on the battlefield next episode, where we will cover G.I. Joe Special Missions from Marvel number 3, Burnout. Until then, the tune, Fallout.
Yo, 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 Joe.
The music themes for this show are done by musical genius Joe November. Please check out his SoundCloud at joseflin99. That's joseflin99. You will not regret it.
I'm in the zone. I've been in the zone the whole time.
I'm going on mute because you have the first line.
Oh, I do have the first line.
Pat, do you want to jump in on a favorite cartoon before we move on?
You know,
time's up, Pat. Or it's, okay. Let's. I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Is this me? Yeah. Why is it just my part that I didn't know Orsted jokes during these parts? I just noticed that.
That's because this is the part I cut and reuse in the next episode.
Oh, sure. Edit. Okay. Okay. All right. I get it now. Okay. I just thought you maybe don't like when Pat does Orsted, you know, and get up.
That's just a happy coincidence.
I'm giving you a stink eye. All right.
And if we were allowed to do Orsted jokes, I'd be like, pick up the mushroom-based holographic inducer.
Get off your sassafras and pick up the phone.